you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. X-Go, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? X-Go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
Everybody, and welcome to the On the Farm Pitcherless podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. Everybody, make sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless Podcast Network so you get all the updates on all the Pitcherless podcasts. You get this podcast right to your notifications, to your inbox. You can leave us a rating and review if you do so choose. You can follow the On the Farm podcast at PL On the Farm on Twitter, as well as Rick at Must Be the Hawk and myself at Jake Mache. We are, of course, your two hosts. Must Be the Hawk, Rick Hake, and myself, Jake Mache. So, you know, y'all follow us and send us any questions that you'd like to kind of talk about on future episodes if you'd like to do that. We're always open to some feedback, some topics. It is a lot of mental load to come up with topics for the podcast sometimes, but we are happy to share some of that. Obviously, if we're always willing to talk baseball, but if y'all have anything else that you specifically want to hear, then we'll be happy to discuss some of that as well. So definitely reach out to one of us on any of those accounts, and we'll be able to take that into consideration. But this week, we're going to do some cool stuff. We're going to talk about the AAA pitchers who have had good season debuts. Just about everybody in the league has had one start so far, as well as cover some general news and notes for Dynasty Leagues, things that are happening around the league. But before we get into that, Rick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Jake. I'm doing good. To kind of touch on what you were saying before, we are the men of the people. We will speak for the people if they let us know what they want us to do on this podcast. Feeling a little goofy today, I guess. But doing good, man. Been enjoying watching some meaningful minor league baseball.
As
we both are living for this, we enjoy minor league baseball immensely. And starting up tomorrow, High A starts kicks up. So I'm going to try to get out to High A Greensboro and go check out the Greensboro Grasshoppers, High A affiliate for Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
And see if I can't see the High A affiliate of Boston, Greenville Drive.
Okay, very nice, very nice. Yeah, no, that's great. I have to figure out where I can go and see some minor league games this year. But it's just been great to have baseball like going on, especially like being at work and on my lunch break and kind of checking some stuff and just like having live baseball happening on like a random Thursday, like middle of the day. Awesome, because man, the off season is long, and there's just, I find myself, you know, you can only like do draft research, and you can only keep yourself from joining more dynasty startups for so long. And so now that the season is actually here, it's nice that we have some games to kind of obsess over, both in the minors and majors. So it's always always nice to kind of have this first like week or two to really just enjoy it as much as possible. And of course, taking all the things that have been happening, the guys that have been breaking out, the random stories that are popping up, and man, it's every year, like no matter how much work you do to like prepare to like look at, you know, at the Fangraphs, the roster resource, the MLB playing time, whatever it is, like, and try to map out how these rosters are going to go and how these players are going to do, how they've performed. It's just every year by day one, it's completely different. And so there's always so much happening. So it's fun to be back in the middle of all that for sure.
It's a dumpster fire every year. We prepare left and right. I have my co-owner in my ear all the time, like three games in. Should we be selling our relief pitcher? Should we be? I'm like, trust the process. Let's just roll with what we got here.
Sure.
I do need to give a public apology to one Nick Kurtz. First baseman.
Oh, did he make you sound dumb?
Oh, he made me sound really dumb. my concerns are no longer with Nick Kurtz. I guess he listened to our podcast, Jake. He was not too thrilled. He went out against Carolina, hit two home runs in one game.
Oh, that'll do it. Yeah.
And already I was feeling like, all right, point proven. He wasn't done. Mm-mm. No, he played UNC Greensboro and decided to hit another one. Mm. So three home runs in two games. I think Nick Kurtz is coming around, and just accept this as my apology, please, Nick. Please, we're better than this.
So he's probably not going to slip to like the end of the first, early second round in like FYPs then, yeah?
I'm not even concerned about that. I just want him to stop ignoring me when I go to the games.
That's fair. Well, Nick, if you're listening, you know what you got to do. But yeah, no, it's there's always new stuff, and it's you think someone, like you said, trust the process. You think someone's really going through it, and then all of a sudden they're not. It's fine. But then there's some guys where maybe it might not ever happen. Looking at maybe Anthony Rendon, is he ever going to get a hit again? I don't know. But I'll probably keep him in my lineup until he does, just to feel something. We'll see.
Did you see the post saying that the last time he got a hit, was it Nolan Chanel still in college?
Yeah. Which, you know, fair. But he was injured, at least a little bit of that. He was actively choosing not to play for a little bit of that. Give him some agency there. Oh, my God. But, you know...
Work that into my contract.
Yeah. Oh my God. But hey, good for him. If I could get paid all that money to just like be around baseball, like
just check out.
Sure. Like Chris Bryant with the Rockies.
Yeah.
Get your massive check. Yeah. Work your butt off, get your massive check, and then like just vibe. Just do, you know? Totally fine. Big respect. Love that for them. All right. So let's get into it. Obviously, I think first we have to talk about one of the biggest topics of the last few days is the insane offense that we have seen from the Norfolk Tides, the AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles, of course, which might as well be an MLB team. That's the way the jokes are going. It's just ridiculous seeing what these guys have done so far. You've got, you know, Jackson Holliday, Connor Norby, Kobe Mahao, Kasten Kerstad. It's just the list goes on, and they've just been absolutely mashing. And of course, the team that they are embarrassing is the AAA affiliate of the White Sox, who someone made a comment on Twitter. I think it was like John Becker of Fangraphs, like, when are the White Sox going to be good again? Hard to see, because their AAA team has been one of the worst teams in the league for the last like 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, where is help coming from? But they got absolutely demolished by the Tides. And man, I mean, Kerstad had 10 RBIs, which was a little rude of him, because poor Kobe Mahao hitting after him at one. There was no runners on base. They had already been driven in by the time they got to him. And then the guy right behind him in the lineup had 7. So he was in a horrible spot because Kerstad just stole all the run production. But it was just, it was ridiculous. Rick, what are your thoughts on that game, that team, and how that's been going?
Well, my Twitter's still trying to recover from all the mass tweets about it. You know, if you know, just a handful or one per person was not enough, we had to have multiples. But I digress. I think Kasten Kerstad was very, very disappointed not to make the opening day roster, and I think that this was a major statement for him. You know, already playing in 5 games with a 583 average, 577 OBP, you know, 4 home runs to this point, 18 RBIs. I mean,
4 home runs in 5 games.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, what more does he need to do? I guess really the main thing, Jake, that I think that we should talk about with this, because I know we're going to talk about a couple of these players that on Norfolk, is what do we believe the future Baltimore lineup is going to end up being? Because I think, honestly, you know, Mountcastle's days are numbered. If he just continually gets hurt, Like, I feel like he misses a chunk of time every single year. And we've got so many power hitters here that are ready to go. Kerstad could play first. He could play in the outfield. You know, I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, Mayo here. He's massive power. And I really want to know, like, what do you think in terms of the infield? Because personally, to me, I know a lot of folks want to believe in Westberg, that he's going to be a major cog in this. I think Westberg's going to be a super utility for the for the infield. I would love to see Gunner either go play at second and let Holiday play at short. See Mayo over at third. Let's get Kerstad over at first. Mountcastle can DH if he wants to. He can hang around. I'll take that back. But they have tons of outfielders coming up too, with Beavers and Horvath. There's a lot of other guys that are coming through that system. Fabian, Judd Fabian's blowing it up in their minor league system too. You know, I Enrique Bradfield, I was just writing about him the other day. What do you see, Jake, in terms of their future infield?
It's tough. I think O'Hearn definitely is out before Mountcastle. O'Hearn seems like he's playing on borrowed time here. He's just playing against righties. He's not exactly an everyday guy, but I mean, maybe he's someone they keep around. Mountcastle is just saying, because, like, so if he's not going to be on the team, you'd think they'd have to trade him. They haven't shown any willingness. We've been waiting for it for like 2 years now for them to trade from strength. They're just not willing to, like, get anything less or anything less than what they value their players to be worth, just because they have a surplus or just because, you know, to pay a market premium. Just like, you know, so even with Corbin Burnes, like, I wouldn't even qualify that as like paying a premium or trading from us. Like, that they got, they did not have to give up a lot to get him. You know, because I think they had already kind of soured on DL Hall. Like, they had tried him in a few different spots. Like, he was just a quad A kind of guy for them, I think, at that point. I think he could still be good for the Brewers' change of scenery and all that. But I think they were kind of soured on him because he was just kind of stuck in purgatory for a while there. And then Joey Ortiz, kind of similar thing. Like, they kind of gave him a shot here and there. Like, they have all these other infielders. And it just, you know, so they dealt to get Corbin Burnes, but I don't know how much more they're willing to do. It seems like, especially with the transition of ownership, I don't know, you know, how that's going to change, like, the team direction at all, or their like, priorities here. How much, like, money they're going to want to eat if they cut, you know, Jorge Mateo, Tony Kemp, Ramon Arias. Like, none of those guys have any options left. And so if they want to get them off the roster, they're going to have to DFA them. And potentially eat some cash there. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard to see how it shakes out. Like, Austin Hayes, like, he's not really a difference maker, but they're still playing him, you know, just about every day.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Santander is done after one or two more seasons.
I could look it up real quick, but I don't know off the top of my head. That's why I love Spotrac.
I'm pretty sure that his contract's going to be coming up here soon. You know, Colton Cowser had the amazing spring, you know. So I think that opens up some possibilities there. And like I said, I mean, you got Judd Fabian, you have Beavers down there, you have Horvath, who I just talked about a little while ago. There's a lot of guys in Enrique Bradfield. I mean, that's basically a Mullins 2.0, you know? So I'm very curious, you know, outfield wise, I think they're fine. I just don't think that Kerstad sticks in the outfield. I think you put that big bat either, you know, at first base. I would hate to put a prospect in at DH, but I think if Mountcastle could solely focus on, you know, hitting the ball harder and hitting home runs,
right,
that would be preferred. And I mean, listen, I've got Mountcastle in a lot of different leagues too, so I don't know. I think that instead of thinking Westberg is a long-term solution at like third base or, you know, whatever, I think that you use him just like Chris Taylor with the Dodgers, play him all over the place. I'm hoping to see Connor Norby here soon. Free Connor Norby. get him up there and let him perform up in the majors. I think the guy's done enough to this point to warrant an opportunity. But like you said, I mean, it's just so full. If you can't play him, move him on. I mean, Joey Ortiz is doing actually a very good job with Milwaukee in the short time so far. Maybe Norby just needs a change of scenery. I don't know.
Right. And, I mean, I just with, let's see here. So with Westberg, I think with the thing about Westberg, like he's going to have to be moved into a super utility role by like when he already has this head start, you know, so he's already had 250 like plate appearances in the majors and he's getting better. So like all of his batted ball data is improving. His approach data looks like it's improving this year. It's, you know, obviously he's only played six games so far, but seems to be trending in the right direction. He's got more power this year. He's had some really bad batted ball luck. His BABIP is .231 so far. So I think there's been some changes that he's made that's like look pretty good. And I think he has this full season to like show the Orioles something. And if he does, I think it's just going to be more difficult to move him out of the role just because he has such a head start on all the other guys. And so if if it's Westberg at second, Holiday. Oh, it's kind of interesting because like Holiday's really the only guy that seems that will play short. Like, so they can have Gunnar Henderson. Oh, well, that was a horrible misspeak there. Gunnar Henderson's going to be their shortstop. So then, okay, Westberg at third, Holiday at second, and then Kobe Mayo at first, Mountcastle DH. And that's probably the infield.
You're going to put Perstad out in the outfield?
Probably at least to start, but it's maybe it doesn't last for his full career. Maybe eventually they trade someone or they lose a free agency. So Santander is, you were right. So he is going to be a free agent this offseason. But there are no other hitters besides Tony Kemp and James McCann that will be free agents after this season. So, you know, Santander probably opens up a spot. But also, I don't think it's guaranteed that he leaves. Like, I could see them bringing him back just for a more, like, just for the veteran presence, you know? Oh, man.
So your outfield right now, you would have Kerstad, probably Mullins, right?
No, actually, I don't think Mullins is an everyday player next year.
Okay. So who would you have in center? Would you have Kowser?
Probably. I don't know enough about his defensive abilities, but the fact that he's up already and he's played center a little bit is probably says he's the best option. So if it's Kowser in center and
Hayes in left,
yeah, he's still there. Mm-hmm. And then Kerstad.
Though I will say, Fabian and Beavers are in AA to start the year.
I have
a feeling that once we start seeing some of this movement with AAA, with Norfolk, you're going to start seeing these guys, you know, take their spot. So depending, you know, on how that all goes, you know, they'll be able to go from there. I think Bradfield is starting the year in, if I remember correctly, I think High A with Aberdeen. So, you know, he could make a big push this year. You know, but, you know, let's just say he's 25, 26, somewhere in that range. You know, that would be kind of my thought. I think long-term, I think if Baltimore moves off of Hayes, you know, Mullins to, you know, back and let Santander go. Like, I don't think you need to have Santander. I think if you have Kerstad going out there, you're going to get more production out of Kerstad with better average OBP
than
what you'll have with Santander.
But then are they gonna like really be willing to send out a starting nine of like guys in their first or second years in the league? You know, it'll be like because if you lose Santander, if you lose Hayes, if you lose Mullins, maybe Mountcastle stays. Like, feels like it would be a pretty unprecedented group of just like young hitters. And that's also like, that's assuming they don't go and spend anything in free agency. I feel like at some point they probably start spending to bring in some more like proven guys to kind of complement, and maybe they focus on that on the rotation. But I think, and that's the thing about this kind of exercise, is that we're coming up with our dream scenarios, but like MLB teams don't seem to love to just like play all the young guys and just like let it go. Cause I think in theory, it's seen as just like riskier and harder to predict, which is fair. But yeah, so it's what I would hate to see happen is something like they become like the Rays or the Twins or the Giants, where they're just like platooning and everyone's getting like 70%, 60 to 70% playing time instead of like 80 to 100%. You know, you got your Gunner, like Gunnar Henderson, maybe Jackson Holliday, and, you know, like everyone else platoons, you know, and that guy, that would suck. But, you know, I don't think, and it's this, I don't think we've really seen this kind of logjam really much in the past either, at least that I can remember. It's kind of crazy.
Right. I mean, it just seems with Baltimore, they do have some interesting pitching prospects in the lower level minors, some in the mid. But I think if they're going to want to continue to, you know, perform, they're going to need to probably spend their money towards getting established arms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the amount of player development that they've put in with these guys, I mean, a lot of these prospects have taken leaps and bounds, you know, since being drafted in their organization. So, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I think if Mountcastle's a veteran, you know, type of presence in there, that could be really huge. I mean, at that point in time, you got to think Gunnar Henderson will be in the league for what, 2-3 years at that point?
Yeah.
You know, and same with Adley. I mean, they're going to start becoming veterans.
Yeah.
You know, and really, this reminds me a lot of the 90s Yankees.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, where they start bringing in, you know, with Bernie in there, and then you bring in Jeter, and then you bring in Posada and Mariano Rivera. Pettit.
Yeah, no, I actually wouldn't know. I was not alive.
I watched from afar with a scowl on my face.
Yeah, right.
A young buck.
Oh, man. But yeah, so that's God, the Orioles. It's a wonderful position to be in, just like as a fan of the team. I'm sure as someone working in the front office, it's a ton of fun. But as fantasy managers, being as demanding as we are for clarity and very clearly defined roles, it seems like they're just not going to be able to give that to us for a while. So obviously, continue to kind of see how it goes and whatnot. But there are a lot of blockages, a lot of hurdles that need to be cleared for these young guys to come up. And it's always much more difficult than we'd like it to be. So, but I think there's, you know, a decent chance that by the end of the season, we're rolling with a lot of these prospects that are coming up. I think Jackson Holliday is probably as soon as they get the service time, he comes up. And I think maybe the rest is maybe based on injuries for a minute. And then I would say, who do you think the next to come up is after Holliday?
After Holliday, I think honestly they're probably going to bring up Holliday and Kerstad at the same time.
Okay.
I think Mayo will be.
I think Mayo's an injury one.
I want to see Norby get his shot, man.
I feel like he's like blast, like on the totem pole there.
But why? He's been in AAA. This will be his third stint. In triple.
Yeah, maybe they trade him.
And I'm hoping that they do. I really am hoping that they do, because I don't see a scenario in which Connor Norby is able to lock down a spot in that team. They're just not going to be patient enough for him to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll give him the same patience that they've given Westberg to this point. Do you?
Yeah. No, I think probably, I mean, he might be what we kind of originally thought Westberg might be, that kind of utility guy, the bench guy that could play like middle infield, outfield, maybe third base a little bit. I don't know if that'd be possible, but yeah, I feel like if anything, he'd be that kind of utility guy for him.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen him live. He is really fun to watch. Great bat to ball skills. I mean, just really solid all around. I'm waiting for it. Waiting for
right.
Jake.
Yep. As we all are, Rick, as we all are. But yeah, so that's the Orioles. That is always a fun, interesting situation. But moving on to a couple other notes, Justin Foscue was promoted, hasn't appeared yet in the majors, is set to replace, not replace Josh Young, but be on the roster because Josh Young got injured. And he probably won't just like command every day at bats. I know there was a lot of talk of him taking on a bunch more at bats with when Nathaniel Lowe got injured, but then Jared Walsh just rose from the ashes, just kicked the coffin doors open and jumped out and did a little dance. I mean, he came back and he has not looked bad, which has been good. And his spot in the lineup has been steadily rising. He batted fifth last time out yesterday on Wednesday. So Jared Walsh is there now taking first base at bats. They got Josh Smith in there in the last two games. And then Ezekiel Duran is also coming in. So, you know, I don't think Justin Foscue is really a set for a ton of at-bats without even more help or just like a lot of success when he does get the shot. But Justin Foscue, I think, is a very interesting player. He is a very, very good hit tool. He spent a ton of time last year at AAA, spent the whole season at AAA, 563 plate appearances, 18 homers, 14 stolen bases, a 15% walk rate, and a 12% strikeout rate with a 200 ISO and a 113 WRC+. So really just solid across the board, not a ton of power, not a ton of speed, but can kind of contribute a little bit in both. Isn't going to hurt you in batting average. Counting stats is in a good lineup. Probably won't be hitting high in the lineup, but should be able to be a decent streamer for some deeper leagues. You got him in dynasty teams. It's awesome if you're in a daily league where you can kind of just flex him in as he comes up. But I think that he's, you know, probably more useful to a major league organization that can kind of put him in at a couple different positions and have him to, you know, be just kind of solid or wherever fantasy. He might be kind of frustrating, especially for weekly leagues, but I think that he's definitely someone to keep an eye on because, you know, he could earn a role, I think, a bit further down the road, because he's a very good true talent hitter for sure.
Yeah, for weekly leagues he might be a little bit of a struggle, but for dailies, definitely somebody to keep your eye on. You know, this is a very similar case to was it Michael Bush with the Dodgers?
The Dodgers last year, yeah. And
now he's gotten his opportunity with the Cubs. Mm-hmm. You know, I was kind of beating the drum on that, hoping that they would potentially move him because it's just filling out there in Texas as well. Similar scenario in a lot of different ways. But, you know, Foscue is a very solid, very, very solid hitter. Like you said, very good numbers in AAA last year. I like the fact that he cut down his strikeout rate. He does draw walks pretty frequently. And even to start this year, I mean, only three games played, struggling a little bit with the average, but still a very solid prospect. I like the fact that he's called up and at least gets an opportunity. But with Josh Smith and Ezekiel Duran, those are very similar prospects. I know Foscue was getting some reps in the outfield last year, so don't be surprised if he's able to kind of work his way into the outfield situation sometimes too if they need a day off. So yeah, a little bit of flexibility there with Foscue.
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to think if he, like, what the situation is for him staying in the majors. Maybe he beats out Josh Smith. Maybe they send Josh Smith down because Smith has three options. Jankowski doesn't have any. Duran, they more than likely keep. So I think, you know, there's a chance they could beat out Josh Smith for the final bench spot when either one of the two injured corner infielders comes back. But I think it'll just be him having to kind of make the most of the opportunities he's given there. But definitely interesting to kind of keep an eye on for sure. And then moving on, another guy promoted to cover after injury, Ben Brown, coming up after Justin Steele hit the injured list. And it was a very ugly first appearance. Of course, it was at Texas. Everyone remember what happened to Brian Wu last year when he debuted at Texas. Just not a great place to debut for anybody. And he went 1.2 innings out of the bullpen, 6 earned runs, 1 strikeout, 2 walks. And, well, it was pretty bad. But then he redeemed himself a little bit coming in on Wednesday of this week against the Rockies. Definitely a bit better situation there. For matchups, he went 4 innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 earned run. You know, it's interesting because I think just who we thought Ben Brown was even at, like, the beginning of last year is just vastly different from who we know he is now. I think I remember him as having a much better fastball than he actually does. The curve is still really good, but yeah, I mean, his fastball now, I mean, it averages like 95, 96, but just really doesn't have a great movement profile. Has just a little bit of horizontal movement, just a really league average vertical movement. Nothing super special there, and it hasn't been getting good results so far. Fastball's not great. So I think I always assumed it was much better, even watching games and whatnot. But the curve is fantastic. The curve has been great. The issue is that he can't throw the curve for strikes, but he can throw the fastball for strikes. But the fastball doesn't get swings and misses, and it gets hit hard. And so it's not a great recipe right now. But I think, you know, if he can maybe throw the changeup a bit more successfully. Threw it twice yesterday on against the Rockies. But that curveball has a 50% whiff rate so far. The fastball is a 14% whiff rate. The changeup has been thrown twice, so you can't really say anything about it. But, you know, I think there's a path for him being a decent long reliever, like we saw in his most recent outing, if he can, just be a little bit more consistent with the locations of the curveball specifically, and then just avoid getting hammered with the fastball, you know, using it strategically. And he did a much better job of that yesterday. So I think it's still possible, but, you know, I think the days of me thinking that he can be a good, like, mid-rotation MLB starter, I think are kind of gone. I'd be shocked if, you know, especially with what we're seeing of his arsenal, you know, it definitely doesn't have a starter's arsenal right now. So I'm definitely kind of sad to see how it's progressed here, but not to eulogize the guy. He's still 24 years old, but yeah, he's got a ton of hype last year, and here we are. But I think he'll be all right. I just don't see him being usable much in fantasy for a minute.
Yeah, it's definitely a little concerning. I was looking here with him throwing the knuckle curveball. It looks like he primarily likes to throw it to right-handed batters. He threw it 23 times to right-handed batters as opposed to 12 to left. With the changeup, it looks like he didn't want to attempt it at all against right-handed batters. So I think he feels like he gets a better look at it with left-handed. Yeah, just like you and I were talking about before the pod started, with that knuckle curve, he's getting 2,285 on the spin rate for it. I think that's pretty solid. If he can throw that curve for strikes, which is a big if, that would be, you know, fantastic. Really, I mean, like you said, working with that 96.4 mile an hour four-seam fastball, he needs to be more effective on where he's locating it, because the batting average against on that is .455. So that is a big red flag. Do not throw. Just keep throwing your knuckle curve. Throw the knuckle curve and change up. Just boom, right in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's that fastball is kind of terrifying. But, you know, I think there is a path to success there, and we'll see how it goes for him. But all right, so that is all of the kind of news and notes, the recent things that we've been kind of watching and paying attention to here. So we're going to take a quick ad break, and then when we come back, we will dive into some of the pitching season debuts in AAA that we have noticed so far, and I want to talk about a little bit. So stick with us after the break.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
All right, and we're back, and we're going to talk about some pitching performances. I think, really nice, because just like last year, we had access to StatCast at AAA for the first time, and this year, of course, that is still the same. And, it's nice because you could use it to get a much better sense of pitcher performance and how their skills might translate to the majors. So last year I was writing the weekly column, the Pitcher's Stash article, and this is where I lived. You know, I was just on Baseball Savant all the time, getting all the StatCast data I could find, which isn't even so much of like quality of contact as it is just like pitch, not pitch tracking, but like pitch sequencing. I cannot find the words. Just keep it like things like swinging strike rate and zone rate and zone contact, things like that. Like things that we haven't had in AAA in the past are all kept track of now. And so we have these now, these metrics that we could use. And so wanted to kind of give a quick little tutorial for how to kind of go and find this stuff for anyone who isn't aware, isn't used to it, that might want to start kind of looking at how these AAA pitchers are doing. And so how to find some of this information, what I usually look at, a lot of what I did last year to kind of just find some guys that could be coming up pretty soon. So how to find StatCast data on a game level. You can pay for some subscriptions. There's some other sites that have it all kind of consolidated for certain players, so you can get like some overall numbers. FanCrafts has some of this stuff, like they have like swinging strike rate for AAA, which is really nice. But if you go to Baseball Savant, you go to the homepage and you go to Game Feed, and then that'll bring up all of the MLB games by default for today. And then if you go to the header where it tells you how many games are on, and you have to click the calendar first to select the date before you change it from MLB to AAA, because the default, whenever you change the calendar date, it takes you back to the MLB page. So you always want to change the calendar date first, go to the day that you're looking at, that you want to take a look at. And then once you're there for the MLB games, click on MLB, and then a little drop down comes up, and you can click on AAA. And then it'll show you all the AAA games for the day. And there is a ton of data in these little breakdowns, these little boxes. And so what I'll do is I'll find whatever pitcher I want to look at. I'll look at their game logs on FanTrax, find when they pitched, go to the date, find the game, and then you open the game. Let me find who I want to do this for. So I wanted to look at the Worcester Woo Sox playing on opening day in AAA against the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. And so, yeah, so if you click on the game, click to open, and all these different tabs come up. The default is the scoreboard, which gives you a bit on like exit velos for the game, and then like win probability, stuff like that. Cool stuff, but not super relevant. If you go over to player breakdowns, that's where the good stuff is. That's the primo stuff. And so you can see the full arsenal for each pitcher. You can see the number of pitches. You can see how many times they threw each pitch, how many swings and misses they got, what the CSW was. CSW broken out into called strikes and whiffs individually, and combined zone percentage, which I don't use as much as just like strike percentage or ball percentage, but it's still pretty useful. Zone swing, O swing, zone contact, O contact. And then it'll tell you the velocity, the spin rate, the exit velo as well. And sometimes, what I found is that it's typically for pitchers that have more experience. You could sometimes find movement data for these guys, but not for everybody. I haven't done the research on why that is, and I hope they change it to where we just get to see movement for all the guys soon. But you can get a lot from this. So I'm looking. I want to look at Grant Gambrill, who is a pitcher in the Red Sox organization, playing for the Worcester Woo Sox. And let's see here. So he is 26 years old, and he was drafted originally by Kansas City, went to Boston in 2021, and has been in the Red Sox organization. Has had like decent success. Let's see here. Like ERA has been steadily decreasing as he's kind of gone through, which isn't super helpful, but he's gotten better at striking guys out. And last year in AAA, in just 10.2 innings, he had a 33% strikeout rate. So it was kind of easy to be like, oh, it's not super legit, because in high end AA before it, he had a 25 and a 24% strikeout rate. But then this year he came out and he kind of backed up what he had started doing in AAA in his first start, looked really good. And so if you look at this, the Savant game feed here, the player breakdowns, he threw his curveball 36% of the time. He threw cutter 20% of the time, sinker 19%, four seam fastball 14%, and a sweeper 10%, for a total of 83 pitches and 14 whiffs in 83 pitches. That's very, very good. And to find the swinging strike rate, you just got to divide 14 by 83. And it was a 16.9% swinging strike rate, which I usually prefer to whiff rate, just because I think I conceptualize what a good swinging strike rate is a bit better than whiff rate. But there's been a ton of research that shows that they're essentially the same, as far as like, success at getting strikeouts. So usually I stick with swinging strike. 16.9% is fantastic. You really usually want it to be like 12% or above for starting pitchers. So 16.9 is awesome. And that curveball was just disgusting. Like, I went and watched this game, and I mean, it's not quite as like big and loopy as a curveball. It has a like really tight break, like really kind of similar to like a like typical slider movement. But I mean, it's just guys look helpless against it. The kind of the issue is that it has a 23% zone rate and a 30% O swing. And so, like, not a ton of guys chase it, and it doesn't hit the zone a lot, but it still gets, I mean, it gets some really good results. And then he has a really deep arsenal. So you can see, you know, all of the different pitches, and, you know, the whiff rates, you can kind of calculate the swinging strike rates in general. So really good data here. And typically when I'm looking at this, like, I really don't look at exit velocity for pitchers. I think in general, the only thing I'll look at for quality of contact or results really on pitches is like ground ball rate. But even that has to be like close to 50% or above for it to really kind of add some extra meaningfulness for me. So exit velocity isn't, I don't think, super important here. Spin rates, I don't conceptualize it super well for pitches. I usually just would rather either watch or know exactly how the pitches are moving, you know, how much inches of vertical or horizontal movement they're getting. And so that kind of helps me a bit more than spin rate does. But every once in a while you see something that's an outlier, and then yeah, I think that kind of tells you a little bit too. But pitch velocity is always super important, because, you know, a lot of guys come in through the minors and they're throwing 90. 90, 91. They're successful through the lower levels. They get to AAA and then they might survive for a little bit, but it fizzles out after a while. And so, like, you see someone that's throwing like 95 and up, definitely kind of gets attention a little bit. I like to see different velocities within the arsenal, different like bands of velocity, different groups of velocity. So if the fastball is at 95, the slider's at 85, and then maybe a changeup at like in the high 80s, maybe 88, maybe a curve at like in the high 70s. And so, like, a few different pitches that are at least like have like maybe a 5 mile per hour difference between them is usually nice to see. Sliders that are 85 miles per hour and above that are not sweepers are usually pretty darn good. Sweepers rely a lot more on movement, I think. And so you can get a lot, I think, from these charts on a pitcher's arsenal. Rob DiPietro of the Launch Angle on the Pull Hitter podcast always talks about zone minus O swing. So taking the zone swing of a player and comparing that to the O swing, because in general, you know, hitters who swing a lot inside the zone and don't swing outside of the zone are pretty good, have a pretty good approach, and usually find good results. I think for pitchers, it's very similar. So you want, I think, those numbers to be closer. The closer those numbers are to each other, the better for the pitcher, the worse for the hitter. So just for example, Grant Gambrell's curveball has a 57% zone swing, which is very low, and a 30% O swing, which is about league average. But, you know, even though guys don't swing at it a ton, you also don't get damage on it because it's not, it doesn't, it, I think that means it's not being hung and it's not being, you know, hit super hard and, you know, scoring runs and whatnot. So I think that's a kind of a good thing to kind of see how the players are taking pitches. If you see a big discrepancy in that, like you maybe might see like a 75% zone swing and like a 20% O swing, bad, very bad, stay away. Because that means the hitters are laying off when it's out of the zone and swinging when it's in the zone. And even if the results of those swings aren't great, you don't, I personally don't want a hitter that's, or a pitcher that's, you know, getting a ton of swings on their pitches in the zone, because I think over time that tends to create issues. So, yeah, they also got CSW here, called strikes and whiffs. It's great if you want to add just like a touch of command into your swinging strike rate. And then of course swinging strike rate, but you got to calculate that for yourself. It'll give you the whiff rate, but you got to do the quick division for swinging strikes. So that's a quick breakdown of everything that's available in the player breakdown section of the Baseball Savant page. Also a little mini breakdown on the guy, Grant Gambrell himself. I think he's interesting. I had never really heard of him before I just started looking at the results for these games and seeing what he was able to do with just getting a bunch of whiffs and using that curveball a ton. 36% of the time for a curveball in a 5-pitch arsenal is pretty ridiculous. So really intrigued by that. And yeah, so one other thing that I'll mention with this Savant AAA data here is if you go to the Illustrator tab under one of these games, you can see where all of the pitches were located that a pitcher threw. And this is where, you know, Nick Pollock talks a lot about, like, you know, the Blake Snell blueprint, throwing fastballs up in the zone and curveballs, breakers, sliders, changeups, all that down in the zone. So they're kind of playing off each other like that. You could see that how a pitcher really exercises a game plan if the pitches are thrown in optimal locations. And, you know, so if you're seeing a lot of sliders kind of in the middle of the plate, maybe, you know, at the waist, even at the knees in the middle, not great. Seeing a lot of, but if you're seeing those sliders a lot, kind of pretty consistently down and away to righties, or even down and into lefties, that's good. Fastballs in general, the trendy thing is to have all your fastballs be up, but some guys really works with tunneling lower in the zone off. Maybe like a sweeper. Some lefties are really good at doing that. So I think that also gives you a better idea of how pitchers are attacking some hitters and whatnot. But yes, that is my lengthy little breakdown of all the things that are available from AAA data on Baseball Savant. And I think it's super valuable to be able to go and look at this stuff, because you just get so much more information with this data about the pitcher's approach and the pitcher's skills and how those things kind of translate to major league hitters. Yeah, Rick, did you have anything else to add? I haven't heard your voice in a while, and I would like to.
No, I mean, you were hitting every single point, and we kind of talked a little bit, you know, before the show. I use Baseball Savant primarily whenever I'm doing some of my evaluations here. Obviously, with the limited resources in the lower level of the minors, I can't use it as much. Whenever I do write about AAA, you know, batters, pitchers, I'll usually try to revert back to Baseball Savant. But Jake, you did a fantastic job being able to lay out exactly what you're looking for whenever you're evaluating these statistics. And it's just so important with a lot of these minor league, you know, players and pitchers in general, because, you know, we have to kind of rely on, you know, other scouts and reporting to be accurate. So to be able to see the numbers for ourselves right in front of us, that is, you know, huge, huge help.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And it's just going to get better as it becomes more available. Hopefully they continue adding it to more minor league levels, more minor league stadiums, and we could just get more data. Hopefully we get to a point where it's much more open sourced for, you know, just general, you know, Statcast data, pitch level data, at all levels, because it just really does so much for player evaluation. Makes it so much easier, especially if you don't just like dig for it or beg people for it or pay for it. So yeah, awesome stuff there. And then let's see here. Another thing to look for, by the way, start-by-start pitch mix changes. This is, you know, I think what it's sometimes hard to catch because you have to be really looking at most of these games. And it's a bit clunky because you have to go in, you know, if you're looking at one pitcher and he makes, you know, four starts in a month, you have to kind of go to, on like that game feed page, you have to click the date, and then you have to click MLB, then you have to click from MLB to AAA, then you have to find the game, then you have to find the pitcher, then you have to analyze it, then you have to go back, you have to choose a new date, you get and do it all over again. And so it's a bit tedious to kind of track a pitcher over time, but that's where some of these sites, you know, that will aggregate it. Like I know Chris Clegg has a database for it. I think Fantasy Pros has a database for it. You know, and that helps. But if you want to see like start by start, you know, changes, Pitch Mix is really, really interesting to kind of watch for these young guys as they kind of work on stuff. Maybe as they add another pitch or focus more on another pitch. Quinn Priester is like the poster child for Pitch Mix changes start by start. I mean, you get loopy if you start looking at these at his arsenal every game, because he just like has no consistency. And maybe I used to think that like maybe he's trying to find the right balance, but maybe that's just his thing where he's keeping everyone off balance. You know, he doesn't want the hitters to know what's coming, which is fine. It's a little bit of the kitchen sink approach, but you know, you could see that, you could pick up on that if you kind of, you know, go in and look at those distributions each game for the Arsenal. I think they could definitely tell you a lot too about a player's development. It helps a lot when players get sent down to the minors with Todd Bradley last year with the Rays, when they were like, oh, we want him to work more on the cutter, I think it was, the curveball, or adding a pitch or whatever it was. You could see how that happens in real time now, which was never available in the past, which is nice. But moving on here, I want to talk about a few more guys that I noticed, and then we'll move on and have Rick talk about a few guys that he noticed with some AAA performances. Michael Plassmeyer, for anyone who missed it, he is now with the Pirates. He was with the Phillies organization last year and just never really, you know, got there, never really found his stride in AAA. He was in AAA for a while, I think. Let me get the actual innings total here. But I think it was about 80 innings in AAA last year. 67.2 innings in AAA last year, and 82 innings in AA or in AAA for the Phillies in 2022, plus another 46 in AAA for the Giants in 2022. And he originally made his AAA debut way back in 2019. So he's been in AAA a bunch. He's also made a couple appearances in the major leagues, but he just, you know, hasn't really been able to kind of break through. And this year, just looking at what he was able to do in his first appearance with the Pirates for the Indianapolis team, his slider was just ridiculous. And guys just couldn't hit it. O-swing of 56%. They were chasing it. They weren't picking it up. They weren't swinging in the zone. It's a 58% zone swing and a 56% O-swing, which is just insane. 71% zone contact. So no one's making contact with it. No one's picking it up well. It's also, you know, having 52% CSW percentage and a ridiculous whiff rate as well, 42% whiff. And so the slider, I think, is really interesting to me because I think the difference is the locations of the slider and the command of the slider. It is much tighter from what it looks like, the distributions of the locations, at least in this one start. We're all taught, this whole episode is small sample, as so much minor league analysis is. But yeah, the slider locations just look so much better. And I think that the fastball isn't great. You know, it leaves a bit to be desired for velocity. And I mean, like, that's probably why he hasn't been able to break through. But I think that these locations are looking really promising, because that was a kind of a big thing for him, I guess, is just getting hit and not finding the zone, I think, consistently enough. So he was a bit interesting to me. And then also Keeter Montero with the Tigers. He was he really doesn't get a lot of the attention that some of the other Tigers pitchers get. The Tigers all of a sudden have a ton of pitchers that are MLB capable. Just so many different options that that they can go to so much depth in the organization right now in pitching, and it's really tough to kind of break through that and find a spot. And so in the offseason, you know, Montero wasn't really talked about a whole lot, you know, when you're looking at all these other guys that are, you know, available for the Tigers. Even looking at just like if he'll be able to appear much this year, I don't see it happening, you know, too soon, you know, from now, because you also got Wilmer Flores. Mason Englert was kind of a long relief guy last year. He's still on the 40-man. And you got like Bo Breeski. There's, you know, definitely some options. But Montero, the nice thing is he's on the 40-man roster as well. But I read a couple scouting reports from about Montero kind of in the offseason and was looking, and you know, I hadn't really watched him a lot last year, but the kind of biggest thing was like, okay, the slider or the fastball is solid, but he doesn't have much beyond the fastball. And, you know, he needs a consistent off-speed pitch, second pitch, whatever it may be. And then in his debut, he got 5 whiffs on 7 swings and 12 pitches with the slider. And again, another thing that he was kind of having an issue with last year was the locations of that slider. Wasn't able to really be consistent with it at all. And if you look at the map of pitch locations in the Illustrator on Savant, Montero is much more consistent dotting that slider down and away to righties. He missed a couple times high in the zone, but it's much more consistent, and the results were really, really good on it. So that's enough for me to just be aware of what he's doing and how that is going. And so definitely be watching him going forward. And, you know, the fact that he's on the 40-man, maybe I'm surprised. Maybe he gets a shot if they need somebody, but they have so much depth there right now that it's hard to see. But I think he's a decent buy before any hype happens, because don't think we've really seen a lot of that yet.
No, but he's got some really, really good stuff in terms of the velocity. I know with the fastball, he maxed out at 97.2 on this most recent start. But what I really like, Jake, is whenever you're looking at his max spins, his RPMs,
yeah,
on those pitches, we're looking at 2,500. You know, with the slider, we're looking at a curveball with 3,000 RPMs. You know, if he's able to throw that a little bit more and get that movement that he wants, this is a pretty interesting prospect, you know, that really has, to your point, has not been talked about really nearly enough here at AAA and on the 40-man too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to be good. It just grabbed my first dynasty share of him. He was on the wire in a pretty deep league too. And I don't think he was very highly owned on Fantrax. I think it's like around 10%, I think, right now. So definitely an opportunity to kind of hop in there and maybe grab him in a lot of leagues. So yeah, I really like him. Really like him going into this year. Kind of wanting to see how that goes with the development of his secondaries. Got to talk about Quaden Priester a little bit. I just mentioned him. He, of course, is playing around with his mix a little bit again, but he had some really great results. He made his debut on March 31st, and let's see here, loading. The one thing about the Priester's approach that is consistent is that he'll never throw like one pitch like most of the time. It is, I think I've seen very rare that a pitch is above like 35% usage. And usually the top like 3 pitches are almost the same. And so again, it kind of points to that whole like, be unpredictable or kind of keep hitters on their toes. But there's a little bit of a velocity bump for him, which is interesting. He averaged 95 on the fastball, which definitely wasn't part of his arsenal last year. He averaged 93 last year on the fastball. If you can get consistently above 94, I think that's much more interesting. He doesn't use it a whole lot like guys with fastballs like him. The vertical break is solid, 16 inches standard. Again, horizontal break, pretty standard. So nothing outlier there, but interesting that there's a bump in velocity, which will be good to monitor. And then the slider also had a good bump in velo that went up to 88 miles an hour with the average velo, where it was 85 last year. Love that for the slider as well. And then he also has a sinker, a curveball, and a changeup. So I think lots of good stuff happening here that it just kind of has me interested again. I've been on him and off him with what he's been able to do so many times with the roller coaster that kind of he was on towards the as the year went on last year. But I think that I still have to pay attention to how he does because it's interesting. Kind of seeing these velocity gains and just how he attacks hitters is always an interesting kind of test case. But so yeah, Quinn Priester had a good debut here as well. And then a couple Tampa Bay Rays for you guys here. The Rays, of course, they're doing it again with Savali. I just saw a graph the other day that showed his rolling K rate. And when he joined the Rays and how quickly that thing just vertically skyrocketed to it's like a 30% K rate right now so far. But the Rays are good. We all know that. I don't need to harp on that. But Jacob Lopez made his season debut also on March 31st with the Durham Bulls, faced the Norfolk Tides. And as we know, it's a very good lineup. But he, isn't a great, velocity guy, but a 92 mile per hour sinker from the left side, I think is solid. It gets the job done. And he's seen some good results on it. So just looking at his whiffs, he got 13 whiffs in 72 pitches in his season debut, which is good. If you do the math, for an 18% swinging strike rate, goodness gracious. So he throws a sinker about 60% of the time, slider 25% of the time, and changeup 15% of the time. Just throws a ton of strikes, 39% CSW. Just hammers the zone. He had a 56% zone swing and a 436% O swing. All great. 68% zone contact. So just really kind of showed out in his season debut. And, kind of another guy that's really been on the precipice for a little bit here. He had a decent showing at AAA last year. He got 79 innings and a 2.72 ERA, but a ton of walks. Had a ton of walks last year. And so far this year, he's throwing it in the zone a lot more. So interesting, they still able to get a decent amount of swinging strikes. Even on that sinker, let's see here. I had just seen it. He got 7 whiffs on 42 pitches with his sinker, which isn't insane. Well, okay, it's a 16% swing strike rate. That's pretty insane for a sinker. And so that's something to kind of look at, I think. Not typically something you would think of for a swing and miss pitch, but really interesting stuff there. Again, these were all just kind of guys to watch how they kind of continue going forward, showing something interesting. And then one last guy that I got that I wanted to bring up is another Rays lefty, Joe Rock. Made his debut on Wednesday, April 3rd, for the Rays, and they recently acquired him. They acquired him from Colorado. So talking about liberated, maybe from the Rock. Anyone gets that reference?
The prison?
Thank you.
I like it.
So no longer pitches in Colorado, which is always great. I watched the start yesterday and just really lanky lefty, comes from behind, release point comes from behind left-handed hitters and has just, I think, really good. Like, I looked at his plots for his fastball before I watched the game, and everything's like kind of low and on the corners, but nothing high. But then I watched him actually approach hitters, and the way he was able to mix in his sweeper off of that fastball, I mean, guys just looked confused and helpless. And it's nice because he's not a two pitch specialist. He does have a changeup and a sinker to go along with the four seamer and the sweeper. The velo isn't isn't too crazy. Let's see. Let me get the readings here. Fastball averaged 92, sweeper averaged 84, which is actually pretty good for a sweeper. And then changeup 86, sinker 92. He got 10 whiffs on 60 pitches. Again, for the math, they really need to put swinging strike on here just to cater to me. 16.6% swinging strike overall. Another good zone swing to O swing ratio. Really, I think Just watching him approach hitters, really crafty lefty that the Rays win got from a bad pitching development team, I'm interested, you know, for sure. So really be interesting to see what he does as well. Rick, did you have anything to add about any of those guys that stood out to you?
Montero is a guy that I'm very interested in. Like I said before, I think that'll be pretty darn good. I think that you touched on everything with these. You know, I think, you know, being able to deep dive into Baseball Savant is a fantastic way to be able to go. You know, and when it comes to Joe Rock, I'm glad he's out of Colorado's system. This is, I think, something that we touched on a little bit a couple weeks back about, you know, not being afraid to be able to go after the talent. And, you know, organizations like Colorado, obviously we don't want them to pitch in Colorado, but you go after the talent and it finds its way somewhere. So, you know, Joe Rock's getting an opportunity. I think that there might be something there. I think that they'll be able to get the most out of him in Tampa Bay. And clearly they saw something and they want it. So I'm all in on that.
Exactly. Well, all right, let's take another quick ad break here, and then we're going to come back and hear some guys that Rick really liked talking about some AAA season debuts.
Bosch tools are built for workers. The Bosch X-Lock grinder switches wheels up to 5 times faster than standard grinders, helping you go from grinding to cutting more quickly. Bosch tools, what hard workers deserve. Learn more at boschtools.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Back. All right, and we are back, and I'm gonna turn it over to my my co-host Rick here, who again kind of did the same thing I did, went and looked at some AAA debuts, what some guys had did, and picked out some guys that stuck out to him. And what do you got for us? What do you got for us? I was interested in the first name you put down here, because I also looked at him a little bit, but yeah, tell us your thoughts.
Yeah, so it's kind of a blast from the past, right? A first-round draft pick of the Nationals in 2019 out of a JUCO college, Jackson Rutledge. The massive individual that he is, he did go out here and pitched 5 innings with 4 hits, 2 walks, an earned run, but he struck out 7. Obviously, with his profile, he was definitely a strikeout pitcher, you know, prior to the command issues that he had. But seeing him go out there and only walk 2 batters, yes, in 5 innings, but that is a step in the right direction. And whenever it comes to Jackson Rutledge, he struggled mightily with his control, you know, and also with some of his velocities too. And I saw that he was back into the mid 90s, which was very, you know, encouraging, because he did lose some velocity there for a little while. So he's, you know, he's on the right track here. When it comes to my next prospect that I wanted to highlight, especially in Baltimore's organization, we can't get enough talking about Baltimore, right? It's a name that has been brought up a ton throughout the offseason, and that's Chance McDermott, formerly with the Houston Astros, but currently with the Baltimore Orioles. Right now, he is sitting typically in the mid-90s with his fastball, but he does top out at 97. The other major pitch that he throws that is extremely effective is his slider. In this outing, though, he had some rough sledding. 4 1/3 innings with 1 hit, 5 walks, 1 earned run, and 6 Ks. So the strikeouts clearly there, but he's continuing to have these control issues that we saw last year. If he's going to, you know, make that final push into Baltimore, they're going to need to bring that down, because otherwise we're staring in the face of another DL Hall situation, right? I know Jake's over here nodding. So, I mean, it makes me a little nervous here, Jake. One prospect that actually jumped out to me, surprised me a little bit, Jake, if I can, Christian Mayna. Now, see, I missed this over the offseason, so doing the research tonight, I ended up stumbling across this, and this is why you wrote on here. Yeah, he was acquired over the offseason by Arizona in the Dominic Fletcher trade with the Chicago White Sox.
I thought also that was broke out of prison. Yeah.
Yeah. He broke out of prison. And now look, he's going to do great. He's going to do great things, right? Five innings pitched, two hits, one walk, six Ks, no earned runs. I love that. I love it. Because he was a fun prospect to watch coming up through the White Sox organization. If there's anything, I see a ton of White Sox. And I agree with what you're saying. Sometimes it can be a little frustrating. But Christian Mayna looked great whenever I saw him live. Now with Arizona knocking on the door, honestly. And this is an organization that still needs some good pitching prospects to keep working its way through. The next one I wanted to talk about a little bit here was Jack Leiter. And I was a little surprised by this. I know I brought this up to Jake. Did not start in this game. Came out of the bullpen. Pitched five innings. Gave up two hits. Two earned runs. But he struck out nine. So very effective with the strikeouts. Mixing his pitches well. You know, limiting the walks. No walks. So that's what you like to see out of Leiter. That was a concern of his last year, but did get tagged with a home run. So it was good to see Jack Leiter. Hopefully he'll be able to kind of pick that up. And being in AAA, I mean, he's only a call away at this point. The next one I wanted to talk about here is Landon Knack. I feel like we talk about him every single year. And I almost believe that he is a free Joe Ryan as well. Get him out of there. Give him some opportunities somewhere else. The guy's starting to age out of prospect, you know, relevance. But five innings pitched, three hits, no walks, no runs, six strikeouts. You got to like that. I mean, just solid performance left and right. And Knack has been a guy since 2019 whenever he was drafted as a guy that has got some very interesting things. Back of the rotation type of arm, in my opinion. The last one I know is a fan favorite of the pod, Mason Black, getting his season debut with five innings, four hits, no walks, no earned runs, five strikeouts. Would have liked to see those walks or those hits down a little bit, Jake, but all in all, pretty solid outing for Mason Black. Any of these guys you want to touch on, Jake?
Yeah, I definitely have a bit of a soft spot for Christian Mayna because just watching him come up last year, and he was like really set in Double A on fire. He was like the youngest pitcher in Double A. It was him and Yuri Perez, and they were both just like absolutely going and just not allowing any runs, doing really well. And then kind of just the wheels fell off as the year went on. He eventually made it AAA and didn't really go really well. And then the White Sox got rid of him because they're very short-sighted. And now Christian Mayna is in a much better organization. And then eventually, if not already, he will have the wisdom of Brent Strom to work with. I mean, you know, see what they've done with Brendan Faught, the adjustments that, because, you know, for someone who doesn't have a great fastball and to just be able to work with the secondaries a ton and develop good game plans there. Faught's been great. You know, they've been really good, I think, with pitching development. And I can see them kind of getting a good amount out of Mayna here. And just, looking at his repertoire here, four-seam fastball averages 93 miles an hour, slider at 84, curveball 83, and then a changeup at 90. And he gets good whiffs. Slider and curveball are great whiff pitches, locates the fastball pretty well. I'm really excited to see what they continue to pull out of him this year. Mason Black, really good candidate to get some spot starts with the Giants sooner rather than later. There's going to be a question on, you know, his strikeout abilities and his upside until he gets out of the PCL consistently. And we see him against major league hitters because we've seen him so much against, you know, in the minors that it's kind of like, you know, I really want to see him against the major league hitters now and just kind of get some more data on him. I think Jack Leiter is, I don't know. Me personally, I think I'm kind of like, for my own mental health, stopped going back in on Jack Leader. And I think he's someone where it's like, if he comes up and he's looking really good and I'm, you know, looking at his appearances and I feel better, I'd be happy to grab him on a couple teams and redraft. But I think in Dynasty, I'm just not willing to give him a roster spot for something more long-term. That is probably my own bias on how many times I've been in and out on him. But I think it's really interesting what he did when he went to the development list last year and worked on supposedly his, you know, his command. And he hasn't had a ton of opportunities to really show the results of that. He kind of came back late in the season last year. So definitely still possible. I mean, 9 strikeouts, no walks in 5 innings. That's a darn good start to him kind of returning to some really, really high status as a prospect here. So really good list here of guys. And these guys, you know, the great part about this, you know, all these players this episode is that these guys are all very close. You know, these are going to be a lot of the first guys for their teams to get calls. And we'll probably see a ton of them in the major leagues this year where, you know, it's really a mixed bag to see how it's all going to translate. But it's exciting for sure, because this is definitely part of the next wave of pitching prospects to come in, as you know, as guys start getting injured and you know, we're getting, you know, traded even deeper in the year and whatnot. So there's definitely going to be opportunities for these guys, and we'll be on it for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that is all the stuff that we have that we wanted to go over with y'all, really just covering all of those pitchers and kind of what we've seen. We'll continue to give y'all updates on just things that are happening around the league for your dynasty leagues from in the prospect world and whatnot. You can catch our next episode next week on Friday, April 12th. And you can, of course, find me on Twitter at Jake Mayshrick, at Must Be the Hawk, and the podcast at PL on the Farm. Thank you all so much for listening, for tuning in with us today, and have yourselves a great baseball week.